Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to feature an interview that Alex Jones had with Greg Coppola and Zach Voorhees, two engineers, whistleblowers from Google. But first, we're going to be playing an interview that Tucker Carlson had with Robert Epstein that's been leading the charge on SEME and revealing what Google is about in manipulation of elections. And here we go with that interview right now.
A new investigation has exposed Google's efforts to make sure the 2020 election goes the way it wants. You know which way that is. Google naturally is doing its best to suppress and hide the story and lie about it. That's just ahead as we continue live tonight from Tokyo, ahead of the president's visit to world leaders in Japan. After those meetings, we'll see him here on this program. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tucker Carlson Tonight, live from Tokyo, Japan, ahead of the president's visit and our interview at the G20 summit in Osaka. Back in America, a tech story that might seem insignificant, but is not. In fact, it may determine what happens in the next presidential election, very well may. A Google whistleblower has come forward to describe his company's plans to remake the American political landscape. Google, of course, is the most powerful company in the world. So when an anonymous whistleblower comes forward, in this case telling Project Veritas that Google is using internal algorithms to shape what Americans see online, and by extension what they think, you better take it seriously.
Fairness is a dog whistle. It does not mean what you think that it means, and you have to apply doublethink in order to understand what they're really saying. And what they're really saying about fairness is that they have to manipulate their search results so that it gives them their political agenda that they want. And so they have to rebias their algorithms so that they can get their agenda across.
That's the definition of propaganda, again, being perpetuated by the single most powerful company in the history of the world. This is not surprising to viewers of this show. James Dorn was fired for Google for his political views, his totally conventional, moderate political views. And they came on this show to describe the culture at Google. Watch this.
There are definitely some political biases within Google that I was trying to shed light on in the document, and that they affect many parts of the business. And, for example, who they do business with and what type of content they create. And I really think that those political biases need to be addressed.
It's not just whistleblowers, though. Excuse me. Hidden camera footage obtained by Project Veritas shows a conversation with a woman called Jen Janai. Her Google title is Head of Responsive Innovations, Responsible Innovations in the Global Affairs Department. In that video, Janai says that Google is working specifically on products to make certain that Donald Trump does not win another election. Quote, "We're also training our algorithms, like if 2016 happened again, would the outcome be different?" People were not putting that line in the sand, that they were not saying that what's fair and what's equitable. So we're like, well, we're a big company. We're going to say it. In other words, we're going to try and affect the outcome of the 2020 presidential campaign. Janai goes on to blast Elizabeth Warren's proposal to break Google up into two companies. Why? Check out this reasoning. Quote, "All these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that." Huh. So using a company's dominance on the Internet to sway the outcome of an election, that's their plan. There should be a term for what Janai is describing. Turns out there is a term. It's a term you've heard constantly from talking heads on television for more than 2 years. It's called hacking an election. Google wants to hack our election. They're saying that out loud. As we've been told over and over again by CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and all the other propagandists, hacking an election is very bad. At minimum, it warrants a multi-year investigation by law enforcement agencies. And yet, it's happening now. The Washington establishment has said they want to prevent election interference, but of course that's a lie. They just want to make sure they control the elections. That's their only goal. That's why they're not attacking the real source of election interference, which is Silicon Valley. Google, Facebook, and their ilk have far more political power than Russia ever has or ever will have. No serious person doubts that. But the people in charge of our country don't care about any of that, because when Google meddles in an election, Democrats benefit. By the way, if you want to find that video, you can't access it on YouTube. Google took it down. That's not surprising. You can already be tossed off of YouTube and Facebook if you decide they're using speech you don't like. They'll accuse you of hate speech, whatever that means. Now they can toss you off their sites just for putting up videos that make you look bad. They probably won't be banning any DNC video time, any videos anytime soon. You can be certain of that. Meanwhile, this week, Ravelry, a knitting social networking website with 8 million members, banned all explicit support for Donald Trump, and only for Donald Trump. And they got away with it. And because they have gotten away with it, other platforms almost certainly will do the same thing. All of this is going on fragrantly in public, but most Republicans haven't even responded to it. They haven't reacted at all. As soon as the 2016 election was over, the press and big tech openly began plotting on how to control the narrative in 2020, which is another way of saying control the election outcome in 2020, and using the scapegoat of fake news as an excuse to control the public discourse. Republicans were in charge of Congress at the time. They did nothing. The White House commands a vast regulatory apparatus. They've sat motionless and done nothing. The only Republican who seems even interested at all in the subject and keeping big tech in check at all is new Senator Josh Hawley. He just introduced a bill that would force tech companies to act as genuinely open platforms in order to receive valuable regulatory benefits. That's the deal. They're violating the deal. Nobody else seems to care. Passing Hawley's bill does not seem to be a conservative priority, though. No one in Congress is talking about it. That's a big mistake. Successful political parties look out for their supporters and for the public at large and protect them from harm. Republicans, meanwhile, are sitting in a stupefied fog of libertarianism, doing nothing while their ideas are suppressed and their supporters are silenced. One day they'll look up and find they have no supporters at all. Who will be to blame for that? Only themselves. Dr. Robert Epstein is not a Republican, but he is the preeminent researcher into this subject. He's a senior research psychologist at the American Behavioral Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. And he is, again, the world's great expert on the effect of the tech companies on political discourse. He joins us tonight. Dr. Epstein, thank you very much for coming on. Seeing
always a pleasure.
This videotape, reading the quotes from this Google executive, does this confirm what you've said in the past? Are you surprised by this? What's your response?
I'm not surprised in the least. It confirms in glowing terms, or in very ugly terms, if you want to look at it that way, that Google not only has the power to shift opinions and votes on a massive scale, but they exercise this power. And this is what I measure in my research. So I can tell you fairly precisely how many votes they can shift. I can tell you fairly precisely how many votes they shifted in 2018.
So why is that not hacking an election?
Well, it's not hacking an election right now because Google and similar companies like Facebook are completely unregulated in the United States. So they can do whatever they please. And if they all work together in 2020 to support the same presidential candidate, which is very likely, and probably it'll be a candidate that I support, by the way, they can shift upwards of 15 million votes with no one knowing that they've been manipulated and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace.
So that's it. There's no election at that point. Our democracy is not real if that's allowed to happen. Correct?
Well, democracy becomes an illusion. Now, there are actions one can take. I've set up so far the only two big monitoring systems that anyone has built to actually look over people's shoulder as they're doing election-related, online activities, and to aggregate that information and see what they are being shown by these big companies. Now, in 2020, I'm actually trying right now to raise funds to build a large-scale monitoring system to keep an eye on these companies and to catch them in the act, literally catch them, when they are manipulating votes and opinions. And in my opinion, that's the only way we can stop them. There are no laws in place that can stop them at the moment.
Calling attention to it might be the first step, and you've done more than anyone to do that. Dr. Epstein, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Next is the interview that Alex Jones had with Greg Coppola and Zach Voorhees. It's devastating to Google. Here we go now, right now.
But we're talking to Greg Coppola, who is a senior engineer, highly respected, put on leave when he went public a month ago with Project Veritas. And he's saying he thinks that Zach Voorhees is the Ed Snowden of whistleblower so far. I certainly thought it with the documents he put out that are incredibly damning that we'll put on screen for TV viewers that Project Veritas has that we've linked to. So we're going to ride shotgun here together. Before we go to Zach, you were describing him, Greg Coppola, on Twitter at Coppola_Gregory, as the Ed Snowden. I would agree, but you're the guy, the engineer, the senior guy, you know, that's got the 35,000-foot view. So I want you guys to kind of have a discussion here, maybe for the first time, I don't know, in the next two segments. Please don't talk to me or I'll interrupt. But elaborate on why you would talk about what this is so important.
Well, I mean, the big takeaway for me was that everything is really it's all about like sources that are picked by hand and based on relationships. That was my big takeaway from Zach Stump, and also certain topics that were considered fringe. Climate change is a hoax. That's a fringe idea, which is very interesting because like climate change is actually a collection of questions. So I don't understand how, you know, doubting any one of them is a hoax. There's also, you know, issues like Pizzagate. I mean, they sort of said that the Epstein, you know, the talk about Epstein in 2016, like that was considered, you know, a fringe topic. And now it's like he's been, you know, arrested and now he's dead. So, I mean, is that still a fringe topic and who's deciding these fringe topics? But my main takeaway is like it's all set by hand. I mean, they have people decide who's credible. And that's a radical break from what it used to be, which was that the algorithm could find a needle in a haystack and basically without anyone's bias getting involved.
So you guys right now, and that's why I had Owen do the interview yesterday, so I would interrupt, because just your climate change point, I could talk for an hour. I mean, I love talking to scientists. You get it. Everyone knows climate change is real. It's constantly happening. That's the only constant is change. But they're saying, oh, you question what we're saying about the change. You're not allowed to have input. You're supposed to just go with what we say, 100% agreement. There's no 100% agreement in any science. But I'm going to stop there for the hour. I think we should have Greg Coppola here with our next guest who's joining us, Zach Voorhees at Perpetual Maniac on Twitter. You guys have a discussion here, meeting each other, talking to each other. Go ahead.
Hey, Zach, what's up?
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Yeah, good.
I'm happy to join you guys for the show today. Sorry, I think there's a delay. I want to say that it's a pleasure to come back on the show with you, Alex. You were the first one outside of my environmental high school class in high school to point out that the frogs were turning gay. And it was really funny that everyone attacked you for that when, anyone who's taken a serious environmental science class knows that some of the byproducts from plastic are estrogen mimickers, and they really are turning the frogs gay. So, you know, I think that there's like a phase change that's happening right now where a lot of the things that people thought were conspiracy theories and wasn't really happening, it's like it's coming out. And, you know, the society that I'm hoping to create is one where we have a free exchange of ideas that come out, and that nothing, you know, that everything can be questioned, and that there's nothing that's like off limits. And that's the scary thing of what Google's trying to do, is it's trying to make things off limits to talk about.
So you're calling for classical liberalism. So you gentlemen are giving a co-speech here together. Take over, because I really want to hear what you think is most central. He's saying you're the new Snowden of big tech. I totally agree. I mean, this is huge.
Well, Thank you. I'm honored to have that label. You know, that's why we're here. It's like, I grew up in the 90s and I had this concept that you judge someone by, you know, the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And I thought that was a really great way to operate. It's kind of a civic nationalism. Like, we're all Americans, and somehow the left, got deranged and they started abandoning that classical liberalism and getting in towards this concept of judging people by the color of their skin and not by the content of their character. And so, these are the, you know, these authoritarians are the type, these segregationists are the type that I've been, you know, fighting against my whole life. And now it's on the left. So, you know, we gotta start addressing that as a problem.
Wow. That's a heavy statement, but totally true. Sorry. Go ahead, Greg.
I was going to say, I mean, I actually think that, there's a lot of abstract issues, but the concrete one that got me the most upset was this way that they call people racists. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, if you have interracial friends, you could have an interracial marriage and interracial children. It doesn't matter. They just use it as a tactic. And then, you know, the governor of Virginia is wearing blackface, posing with the KKK. That's fine. But everyone else needs to be shut down. And I just think of all the concrete things that are the worst thing about this system, the way that you can just call someone a Nazi or call someone a racist, and one side gets to do it to the other side, whether it's politics, whether it's newspapers or whatever, like, they've set up a system where a Democrat can call a Republican racist, and that makes sense to everybody. Oh, yeah, they call Donald Trump racist all the time. I mean, that's one of the analyses I do. You know, these are like, the newspaper says Donald Trump is a racist. It's not even like a candidate is saying it. So it's just this idea that they're using the notion of racist to control people is the concrete issue that has me most upset also.
And it's the media. Go ahead, Zach. It's the media that's invoking racism and creating it. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the New York Times is the most racist, news publication in America right now. They're constantly, you know, pushing a narrative that the problem with America is white people, and that everything that Trump says should be interpreted under like this extreme dog whistle. And they take what his words, then they like reimagine what his state of mind is, and then they push that as if it's objective fact. And, you know, like, I understand that Trump is, you know, really polarizing, that he says a lot of things that are on his mind that make people unhappy. But anyone going to the Twitter feed and looking at what Donald Trump is posting and then looking at, like, the New York Times is posting, and, you know, it's, what the New York Times is posting is like pre-World War II Germany.
Exactly. It's insane. When we come back, then let's get into other points you want to make. Other whistleblowers are getting ready to come forward. How you think big tech's going to respond. How you think Congress should respond. The obvious perjury. With Zach Voorhees on Twitter at Perpetual Maniac. And Greg Coppola, Coppola_Gregory. You got to visit their site like it's a message board, though. You're not going to get it if you sign up for it. You have to visit it by hand. Welcome back. I'm Alex Jones, your host. And I had the crew all run up to me during the break, and people came over from the other side of the office, and they said, this is history. We've got two Google engineers that have the courage to go public. The first one and the second one. Others have just leaked stuff. And they're there together interfacing for the first time live on an alternative system that Google and Facebook and Twitter and Apple didn't want to exist. They knew it would threaten them in the future if it was here to challenge their information dominance. So remember, it's not about credit. It's about celebrating what we've got left. DrudgeReport.com, NewsWars.com, InfoWars.com. We're trying to build an infrastructure, though a lot of it's ham-fisted. We don't have the billions of dollars to challenge this, and history's happening. That's why listeners and viewers buying products, going to the store, getting things you already need at InfoWarsStore.com is the reason this is happening. And on this platform, so that people like this have a platform, because Zach Voorhees and Greg Coppola, they have put this info out, and there was almost a total blackout on Greg Coppola. There has been a total blackout on Zach Voorhees, but like, alternate dimensions, we're not exaggerating with 200-plus radio stations and over 100 cable and TV stations that we conservatively have over a million real people an hour tuning in. Now, I've had peaks before they censored us where it was 10 times. That doesn't matter. It's who's tuning in. Thought leaders, the White House, other governments. And so I want to – you guys have said you can say the 15 after. I am officially going to try to stick a – you know, sock in my mouth, and I want you guys to go through the perjury, what you think should come next, other key points, and really just give people the data dump of the gestalt of where we are and why this is so important. People say, oh, just use something other than Google. Yeah, that'd be great. But they have 90%+, as you know, of what's already happening. As you said, Greg, that people just look at what's at the top as God. And so if you go to there and they say the Republican Party's affiliation in California is the Nazi Party, people, and that happened for over a month, people believed that. So we've just given so much power over to this. So you guys have the floor, both of you, Zach Voorhees on Twitter at Perpetual Maniac, Greg Koppel on Twitter for now, at Koppel _ Gregory. What do you think's coming next? Why did you go public? Obviously, more whistleblowers are coming. This is an amazing watershed moment, so go ahead and take over.
Can I take the lead on this?
Yes.
So you mentioned that Google listed the Republican Party of California as listing them as having a Nazi ideology. And I have some insider information on exactly what happened. It's not actually included in the Project Veritas disclosure, but what I can say about that is what happened is that Wikipedia had this information, and Wikipedia was vandalized, and then Google was using Wikipedia as its source of truth database. It's listed as one of its source of truth databases. And so this information got ingested under the ideology tag, and then the algorithm that generates the front page of Google search, would generate that bit of information as if it were true. And so as a result of this leak and the Republicans being slandered as, you know, Nazis, there was this outcry, and Google decided that, wow, there's so much vandalism in Wikipedia under this ideology tag that they just decided to just ban it from all of Google search.
I'll jump in here, but this is also a bombshell. I want to get Mr. Coppola's take, but that's what you experience is AP put out that I lost a lawsuit. They used that to take my banking credit ratings again that I had just gotten back, proving the other one was a fraud. I never wrote the book. I didn't lose a lawsuit. They don't care because they know if you can get a thought leader or, as you say, a trusted source like AP to say something that isn't true, that is then taken like a conviction, a false yep. conviction, and then passed on. This is so dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry. I'm on a delay.
What was I going to say? Just going to come back to the racism thing and how I did this kind of 2-week study where I was looking at the, different results you get for, Donald Trump. And I found like, you know, they're calling him a racist all the time and you can just, it's all on GitHub. And I was just thinking about like playing that back, you know, 3 years and how that's what's been going on for 3 or 4 years and just walking around New York and you can just kind of see. It's like it just kind of, you know, I never actually did a formal study of it. And until I did, I was like, yeah, I mean, this is why New York has been the way it has been for probably 4 years is because people just, you know, tech is giving, like, would the New York Times have any credibility at this point? Like, if it wasn't promoted by tech, would, you know, when people are at home, they don't want to watch CNN. So the fact that it continues to be Google's most trusted resource is sort of what keeps this whole thing alive. I think if you hadn't had tech, you wouldn't have had all this racial division.
I mean, let's just say it. Let's just say it. There's more racial division in this country than probably in the 60s. And let's just say it. They're fomenting the idea that white people are bad. It's mainly white people leading it. And there's just massive attacks increasing and incredible division that didn't exist before. This has been such a nasty snake bite that big tech and media have done, basically.
And in my experience, I mean, I guess everyone knows this, but people who live within the sort of within the cocoon of like what big tech likes, you know, they learn about the people who liked Donald Trump. I mean, not to make this partisan, but this is like what's been the big issue lately. They learn about the people who like Donald Trump from the New York Times and from PBS, who then say they're white supremacists. They like David Duke and this type of stuff that really makes no sense. And, you know, for example, like when in 2016, I would go because I was interested in Donald Trump. I thought it'd be good for the economy. So I would go to some of these meetups where people were meeting. And, you know, it's like a few blocks from the New York Times. And half the people there are not even white. They're Asians. They're Hispanic. They're Black. They're Jews. You know, everybody's there. It's just a couple blocks from the New York Times. They know, right? They know that it's not white supremacists, but they still say it every day. And
it's people that want prosperity and a future and who want all these secret technologies released and all the medical stuff released. Exactly. You go to a Trump event, man, it's cool people of every color who are really want a future.
And also, I mean, you know, it's complicated how to measure, but I would say the economy is better under Trump than under Obama. So that's the reason right there. I mean, anyone who's, you know, financial situation is better, they have a reason why. It's not racism.
And then you see the Federal Reserve trying to ruin that recovery.
Yeah, and there's just such a discipline of the people who, like, say, work in tech. They kind of know that, like, I think some people say that tech workers are liberal, so that produces a liberal product. There's also the other direction, which is I think people just observe what the tech products are doing. They hear the CEO saying these products are neutral. So then they have to really, if you want to be in good standing, you want to be loyal, and you want to protect your family's financial future.
You play along with the delusion.
Yeah, you should learn, like, if what's coming out of Google News is that Donald Trump's a racist, well, that must be neutral somehow, so then he must be a racist. And I think that the direction of tech workers learning from the tech products is something that most people don't talk about. But I actually,
oh, you're saying the tech workers are amongst the most brainwashed.
Yes. Yes, that's what people have to understand, is that they're some of the most brainwashed. And also there is a pattern of education to make sure that people understand that they're fundamentally racist. Google had this test called the Implicit Association Test, which was discredited, and they eventually terminated the project. But every year, employees would sign up for this IAT test, Implicit Association Test, and the test would tell you how racist you are by figuring out your response times to certain questions that were asked.
Wow, then they can just program the test however they want to then make you feel guilty, so you submit to the fact that you're a thought criminal.
Yep. And the thing is that once people realize, oh, I'm a bad person, then they seek like an atonement through, you know, doing something that's like anti-racist.
Which means submitting to their agenda that has nothing to do with it. You could counteract that. Oh, the Chi-Coms have 2 million ethnic workers in forced labor, and they're killing them. Oh, don't say it, because that just short-circuits the whole conundrum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let me raise this.
Yeah, actually.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's very interesting, sort of people who are kind of in this leftist motif of thinking. If you say something that they haven't heard or that doesn't fit with, you know, because they're so used to hearing the New York Times characterize their opponents that if you say something that doesn't make sense, it's almost like they just don't even register it. I've witnessed this, like, you know, just over
exactly.
And over.
They get in a rut of the same chants. So you're telling them, and they're like, what is that space alien talk?
Yeah.
Like I'll say, I'm for free markets and universal basic income, you know, and they just, to them, socialism means that the government is providing the services. And so if you just talk about universal basic income, they're just like, they just can't process the time. It's like, let's just give someone a check rather than a service. And they're just like, what? Why do you want to help them? You know, and they won't.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, and talk about the perjury, and talk about how they're targeting minorities. Wait till you see these secret documents. All right, history's happening right now with Greg Coppola, the highest level engineer from Google to go public, and then Zach Voorhees, who I was saying, a lot of people are saying that Voorhees is the Ed Snowden of leaks from big tech. He is. And Greg Coppola has, you know, certified that. So this is a short segment, long segment coming up, gentlemen. Let's get into the perjury, though. When you see Sundar Pichai go and say, we've never manipulated any search. Well, everybody knows you can pay to have stuff manipulated. You can put ads on it. That they did it in the WikiLeaks for Hillary. So just the lies. You talked about this, Greg Coppola. And I want to get Zach's take on it, but one of the big places you really got him angry at you was saying, look, they're perjuring themselves to Congress. I know. Well, even a layperson knows they're doing that, but give us some specifics.
Well, I mean, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know about perjury. I'm just saying it's not true.
Well, tell us what's a lie. Yeah. Perjury's a lie.
Right. So the thing is, like, there's this real emphasis on trusted partners, you know, and those trusted partners, you know, if you look at them, you take the top 20, you know, they're just slight variations on the same theme. I mean, they're basically, you know, everything that's going to, you know, come out of Google News is from like a certain, you know, circle.
It's a circle. I was about to say circle jerk.
Yeah. It's a certain, within a Venn diagram, there's a certain, you know, I don't want to, you know, it's, you know, it's 20% of possible thought or something like that. You know, it's not the whole range. And, you know, the natural conclusion that everybody's left.
So the default is they're picking what you get. So to claim to Congress we haven't fixed results is just a ridiculous lie.
It's like saying, you know, we're politically neutral, but our most trusted sources are HuffPost, Politico, and the New York Times. But it's, you know, we're not taking political sides. I mean, I don't even know what that means.
It's just beyond Whopper-level lies.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I would say, yeah, there's no way you could call it politically neutral. I mean, there's no way.
I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, you got the CEO of Google, and he's telling Congress, we don't use blacklists. And then the full-time engineers inside the company can just go on to MoMA, which is the internal search engine, and do a search for blacklists and then have the blacklist show up. And
they even call it a blacklist.
They actually called it a blacklist, and it was actually available to every single full-time employee in the company.
Wow. Please continue, because you're the Snowden of this, these documents you released. Little Birdie's told me you have even more.
No, all of it was was disclosed with Project Veritas. And it has to be that way for operational security.
No, I understand, but I mean, Little Birdie's told me you know other people that are getting ready to go public, though.
I don't want to comment on that because it's ongoing. There's a lot of people that are upset about what's, you know, been happening. And for them, they've been worried that if they come out and disclose these documents that they'll be targeted by Google's ruthless machine. And yeah, I've talked to other people that have had their entire lives ruined.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, you guys, you are the real men. I'm not kissing your ass. Like, I don't care about sports guys. I care about, I mean, like, when I go to sleep and I'm thinking, man, those guys are really cool. Well, you guys have put a lot on the line. You've gone through a lot. They sent cops to your house, didn't they, Zach?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that in order for us all to have this conversation, you know, about Google, we can't, you know, the whistleblowers can't be worried about what documents have or have not been released into the public that are sensitive. You know, and so I was able to find a large cross section of documents detailing the censorship machine, and now we can talk about it without everyone else can talk about it without violating their NDA.
Sure, you're just giving us the general operating manuals, not the fine minutia that name names.
It's a little bit both actually. And I actually want to take this moment to apologize to some people that were inadvertently leaked out. That wasn't my intention. That disclosure went in there, and I want to apologize. A little too much was released.
Well, here's the thing. So many people never take action because they want to be perfect. God judges the heart, my friend. The big mainframe judges the heart. Your intention has been good.
Yeah. My intentions were pure. My intentions were America's security. And so I don't regret anything that I've done.
Let's talk about Professor Robert Epstein when he said, let's talk about the election integrity and why you've been forced to do this with both these American heroes, Zach Voorhees, Greg Coppola. We'll be right back on Alex Jones with InfoWars.com, the dreaded site. All right, this interview is history-making. Everybody says history this, history that. No, it's history-making that we have this platform in defiance of the establishment that without YouTube, without Google, the interview on our servers, our live stream servers, and the other videos yesterday, this morning, had 2.3 million views. Now, sure, these interviews in the old days would have probably 5 million on YouTube. But the point is we built our own system, and people are using it, and folks are buying a product from us and stuff. We can pay for the bandwidth because the bills are big. I'm always like, whoa, that video had 14 million views. That bill's going to be big. But here we are building our own thing like Matt Drudge came here 4 years ago and warned us to do. Greg Coppola on Twitter, Coppola_Gregory. He's shadow banned because of what he did. You've got to go to his actual Twitter to hear what he says. You have to hand type it in. Coppola_Gregory. You got Zach Voorhees, Perpetual Maniac on Twitter as well. Again, my son went on Twitter, his own site, not even InfoWars. 10,000 in 2 hours. He's been on a few months. He's at 12,000 now. So again, it's the shadow ban. It's not letting you compete. It's not letting you on the field. It's not competitive. It's not American. It's not pro-human. It's not even, if you take the term evolutionary, it's stunting that. It's saying there's no survival of the fittest here. We don't let you actually compete. So, gentlemen, I was mentioning before the break about you were getting into how they target people on their race, how they know how a person swipes. You've released all the documents, how they're spying on everybody. There's more than one way to skin a cat. I don't want to get involved with corporations and control what they say and do. But when they're bigger than governments and then let China and others create the regulations because we won't, the First Amendment is a regulation saying you won't prohibit. So we need that to be enforced instead of letting China and the EU come in because we won't pass laws saying no or enforce our laws. How do we say no to the election meddling? How do we say no to the working with foreign powers that Peter Thiel and you and others have been exposing that Google's involved in? Who wants to take that first, Mr. Coppola or Mr. Voorhees?
You want to?
I feel that, coming out has been a very interesting experience because what I realize is that Google can see pretty much every single thing that I do online, right? Like they can see what I do because I use Gmail. They can see how I browse because I use Chrome. It's really hard to get away. Even when I want to write a document for notes, that is a Google Doc. Like I'm attached. It's almost like part of my brain. And for me, it's the getting rid of that, like a Google fasting. Like I'm ditching Google in every single aspect of my life. And it turns out that there's actually really great services out there. Like Proton Mail in a lot of ways is better than
So it's a process of like divorce. And I don't know if you can get to this yet, you and your colleague who I really want on and the Defense Department stuff, but you, this has happened to me. You're just like, man, they're listening to the phone. They're reading what I say because they're countering you in real time before you go public. I mean, are you ready to go public with that? Because they admit they're doing it, but this is warfare level stuff. They've got a team of probably 50 people on you right now, but that's an honor. You can now probably lead some of them out of darkness. Do you kind of see that priest position you're in now?
You know what? It's very hard to convince a true believer. They kind of have to see, like, they have to get targeted before they kind of like wake up. As far as deprogramming the true believers, I mean, they're going to have to come and wake up, on their own. What I'm aiming for is I'm aiming for the people in America that understand what's going on, but they're being slandered by the establishment players as conspiracy theorists. And, in order to fix our elections, we have to fix middle America. We have to like let them know that these big tech giants are hostile entities. And that they've got to start the process of moving off of those platforms. And if we're not using Google to, browse the web, if we're not using Google to actually.
So you're preaching the Drudge Doctrine, because for 10 years he said, get out of the gulags, run, build your own thing, decentralize.
We have to get it off of the gulags. That's right.
I think that's a fair. Drudge, I think, deserves the credit. I think Matt Drudge used to be known as the Drudge Doctrine.
Yeah, the Drudge Doctrine. We have to make that personal.
Greg?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I mean, I don't know about regulation, but I would really emphasize the importance of free market solutions. Anyone who believes in the free market in general, I think, and just as someone who builds ranking algorithms all the time, or has, there's really a lot of personality that goes into a good algorithm. And I don't think you can take somebody who doesn't want to make you a product and regulate them into making a product. It's like right now the products sort of don't have any personality as it is, and you're going to have the government start regulating them. I mean, this is like not anywhere near as good as just having competitors that can arrive.
No, I had top lawyers call me and say, hey, Trump's about to take action. I said, this draft's a nightmare. You can't have government that knows how to deal with sick cuss words it bans and have it understand algorithms. This is insane.
Europe
has GDPR.
Sorry, go ahead.
Europe has GDPR, which is already just like a hassle for anyone that just, it's like, oh, I want to throw up a new social network. Well, now if someone in Europe's going to see it, you got to like read through the entire GDPR thing and comply with it. I mean, GDPR is really a gift to big companies because they just have people sitting around, on the payroll. Like, all right, well, you look into the GDPR thing and they're probably never going to get busted for it anyway. So,
there's an excuse to spy. So let me ask you this, getting into algorithms. We got to keep going. No, you guys got to go. This is so historic. I have another guest. He's pushed back. But getting into algorithms, all I know is if something's popular, the old algorithm was, it gets promoted to people that already like that genre. So the algorithm just knows how to target people with what they want, giving them what they want, like a PKD wirehead, plugging them into the pleasure centers. I mean, isn't that really it?
Well, I don't know what you're saying. I mean, we want people to get what they want, I would think. I'm just saying that, like, you can't take a product. You can't, you know, if someone doesn't want to give one, you know, someone in your audience.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Isn't a good algorithm just giving people what they want?
Right. I mean, that's what, you know.
Instead of force feeding them, that's not an algorithm, right?
Historically, there was a focus on the user, and that meant giving the user what they want. And I think that's sort of changed now to, like, making sure that the user doesn't think anything wrong, which is a completely different approach to having a company.
Wow, that was the heaviest thing I've heard in like a year. Exactly. And people are trying to throw this up. They don't want this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even really have a place now I can go and, like, definitely just, like, a news feed that would just send me stuff that I like. Like, you know, YouTube recommendations. Like, I don't just, you know, I can't just browse YouTube recommendations to find stuff that I like. You know, I think.
Oh, you see it all now. It's just force-fed go-to-sleep stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, really, you know, a lot of these companies, I mean, search is a difficult thing. I actually use DuckDuckGo first, and then I use Google if that doesn't work. But basically, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, these all started with small teams. It's really important to remember that small teams, if they were not, if there was no anti-competitive practices, I think they could, you know, they could make cool products so very easily that would work a lot better than
regular. And that's what Bill Gates said. He's always been worried about small companies and people like you building new things. But you said these anti-competitive practices where they call any site that they don't control a Nazi, it gets deplatformed, or they buy it up. How do we stop that?
Oh, expose them to the free market. I think they're being propped up. I think distorting the free market. I think that when the free market is returned, that big tech will be tamed, because they'll realize that if they're going to censor us, then we're going to censor them.
Wow. And I mean, that's really it. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say half of America is really being kind of antagonized by tech products. They're not happy. It's the same thing in every country. So shouldn't somebody be able to get rich off of this, of just catering to these other people, if you know, there really was a free market?
Well, that's what's been said. What if Trump or others got together and promoted a new startup? Everyone would leave immediately. That's the Achilles heel. And there's no bloody revolution. There's no lawsuits. There's no antitrust. Just, okay, Google. Okay, Apple. F you.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting also, like, the campaign finance angle, because it's like, you know, everything's a campaign finance violation, but then for Google and Facebook to be part of the Democrat Party, that's not even considered. So, like, you know, what if Donald Trump had a social network that was actually making money and helped his campaign? They'd probably shut that down, but they don't. But Facebook's allowed to just be part of the
Democrat. Well, let me be the first to offer you gentlemen together once a week, whenever you want, a 2-hour show to say whatever the hell you want with no strings attached. I mean, the listeners love this. They love a real discussion. They love to see behind the curtain that the real people that built these amazing systems that do such incredible things would have been turned against us. I'll ask you in the break. You got to go. I understand whether Zach or Greg can stay together, but this is history-making. Two senior Google engineers that have whistleblown, the first two, publicly coming together live on InfoWars. If that isn't radioactive kryptonite to tyranny, I don't know what the hell is. I hope you're sharing the live links right now, because history's happening. We'll be back. Final segment with these incredible guests, Greg Coppola, Zach Voorhees. Follow Zach at Twitter at Perpetual Maniac. Twitter for Mr. Coppola, Coppola_Gregory. And take pleasure in not getting his alerts. Take pleasure in not getting his updates. I get all of the Ben Shapiro updates. I get all of the establishment Republican updates. I get none of the updates of the good guys, because I, you know, obviously have an account on Twitter and don't even really tweet, but I do it to follow stuff and have instant messaging, even though I know it's all being surveilled. And you just notice whoever's really good, you're not gonna just get fed to you. You're gonna have to go find the good stuff. Isn't that common sense in the way the universe works? Like, you just don't find the diamond. You don't just find the best wife or the best husband. You don't just find that four-leaf clover. You got to look around for the four-leaf clover. When I was a kid, I used to love four-leaf clovers. The clover would grow in Dallas. I'd look for like an hour, and I'd finally find a four-leaf clover. That's kind of what it's like, you know, and it's a reawakening of humanity. It's a magic moment. So, Zach and Greg, here in closing, how do you expect big tech to strike back? They've been very arrogant for 30 years. No one's regulated them. But now because China and the EU are coming in through that vacuum and regulating, Congress is going to take action. Trump's going to take action. The danger is, and I'm not being elitist, but these guys are all busy. And most of them are 70 years old or older. They mainly watch TV. But now they know the Internet's big, but they still don't get it. I'm worried big tech will do back doors like we're already seeing and give them regulatory powers that are even worse. So we need to get guys like you in front of Congress, I think. What's the plan of action? Let's talk about plans of action with both of you. Let's go to Greg Coppola first. Greg, what's plans of action here?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm really curious when they're gonna admit that Zach's leaks have happened. I mean, I'm talking about the mainstream media here. You know, that could be an interesting thing. And just like, what's gonna happen when they have to say, you know, this actually happened weeks ago that Zach leaked all these things, and we just didn't tell you. And these, you know, they're alleging that there's a system of censorship, and we didn't tell you about it for 2 weeks. I mean, is that gonna kind of get anyone thinking? I don't know. And secondly, I think, you know, I would just underline that with Zach's dump, I mean, I think you've really seen everything now. It's all, I don't even think we need another leak. I mean, I'm sure some people are looking for it, and some people might leak other things that are interesting, but I actually don't even think that we need anything else. And I think it's really important for consumers to just say, like, look, there's a bias. We can see it. Everything's set by hand. It's nothing to do with computers at all. And
well, that's it. You just said something. God, I love talking to you guys with 150 IQs, 160, because exactly. Everybody's always the next dump, the next piece, the next. What do you need when you have them saying blacklist and they've lied to Congress and said there aren't, with specific names, my names and others' names? It's all right there. We have them, smoking gun, bigger than Dallas, and it's there. We've got, it's a pile of smoking guns as big as Mount Everest is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't see what else anyone would really need at this point. I mean, someone else, I'm sure there's interesting stuff, but it's time to just.
No, it's like Monty Python when the knight that goes knit has had all his arms and legs cut off. It's like, it's done. Why aren't, no more getting obsessed with like target fixation. Like when World War II, you fly over a train and shoot, it already blew up. You still just keep shooting and fly into it. We've already blown it up. It's like we have the tools. I think that's what he's saying, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the meme where there's like a dog in the building and everything's on fire and he's just, you know, saying, oh, yeah, everything's fine. You know, the American people have had a fire woken up in them. And I think that they're really going to, have a conversation with the representative. And, you know, that representative is going to come back from recess and they're going to be energized to, you know, start working through what the solutions are. And, you know, there's think tanks that have deeper knowledge in free trade. You know, I'm a computer scientist. I'm not an economist. And, you know, we're going to have a period where we can all get together and figure out, you know, what needs to be done. And, you know, even if there was another leak, like, I don't think it would even be news because this leak that I provided has been so comprehensive. You know, people can find out if their favorite influencers have been blacklisted. For example, I just wrote a Medium post describing how Luke Rodowski over at We Are Change, you know, the fact that he showed up in a blacklist and exactly what that means for him.
And We Are Change is a journalistic liberal group that I helped launch that exposes George Bush for war crimes. I mean, like you said, they're suppressing the left as well. Any real leftist that are actually doing something real, they suppress them.
Yeah. You know, I was attacked by Antifa because I disrupted one of their events when they tried to take over Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, they gave me death threats. And it's really funny because I've done more against fascism than all of them combined.
Well, that's what I'm saying is I'm a classical liberal. These terms mean nothing. I want truth. Like Martin Luther King, like you said, man, I believe in that. And they are going against that. Why do you think they betrayed it? You call it derangement, but it was programmed that way. It's in the WikiLeaks. The professor tells Hillary, we got to go to culture war. Even worse than we've done. So why are they betting on culture war? Like, it's so horrible. It's so racist.
Yeah. So, you know, the best – can I answer this? So the best video that I've ever found that describes what's going on is a video by a Russian dissident named Yuri Bezmenov. And he detailed, he was responsible in the KGB for subverting a civilization. And so he spilled all the secrets in a video that exists on the internet called Yuri Bezmenov. Just search for him, you'll find it.
Well, you spoke several times before about ideological subversion. That is a phrase that I'm afraid some Americans don't fully understand. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. There is nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage intelligence gathering looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising, probably. That's why your Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion, and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money, and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country.
And he basically lays out these four steps for ideological subversion. And it starts off with demoralization, and then it goes to destabilization, which is where we're at now. And then there's a crisis period, which is, you know, you see a lot of these things that are happening in the news, and they're trying to force a crisis, especially with the Federal Reserve jacking up interest rates. And then during that crisis, that gives the revolutionaries the justification to take over, you know, subvert the Bill of Rights or whatever the constitution that country has. And then the society goes to a new normal, and that's called normalization.
So, and that's in the Cloward and Piven plan and all of it. Incredible. You guys are amazing. Greg Koble, you were trying to jump in there. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the social justice thing is a motif. I don't think it's a genuine ideology. But, I mean, I think in terms of next steps, I think everyone should just, you know, conclude that what they thought was happening is happening. And, you know, that'll just create a market for new products. And I just want to underline that, you know, a precocious child can create a new social network. There's nothing really technically difficult about doing that.
Well, how does it feel to, though, be in the vanguard of history? Both of you, I know you're just doing it. It's the right thing to do. Can you feel the energy? Can you feel it?
Yeah, I actually do. I feel it, yeah.
And did you ever feel anything like that at Google?
It's a different
energy. Opposite.
So both of you feel it, don't you?
Yeah, there's two different kinds of energy.
I felt that I was going in the wrong. It's entirely reversed, right? Like the energy is opposite. Like in Google, I had this feeling that everything was going wrong, and now
hold on, both of you got to finish. I'm going to finish with one more comment about the spirit. Because once you feel it, there's no going back. We discovered the wheel and fire. We built the engines and the clocks and the dams and the spacecraft and the computers. Humans are the author of our world, not technocrats telling us to forget our power and to go to sleep so they can ascend to some silicon AI god. Zach Voorhees is the Edward Snowden of whistleblowing inside big tech. The bombshell broke with Project Veritas 2 days ago, exploded yesterday, and now has gone supernova. Greg Koble helped lead the charge as the most senior engineer to go public so far, pointing out the elephant in the room, the incredible lies. So in closing, I want to ask both of you, starting out with Zach Voorhees, you talked about a weight off your soul. That's the thing, is that when you serve evil, the yacht or the women don't, it's not pleasurable. Now, if you serve good, you don't even want those things. Not that they're bad. It's just that they're nothing because you're tied into the cosmos, the universe, humanity. And I haven't talked to you previously about this, but I've seen you speak to it. Can you talk about, you got cut off on the break, about what it's like to be even unconsciously serving evil? Your subconscious is more powerful. It's the supercomputer. It knows you're part of something bad, versus when you get in line with the truth, what that transition was like.
Yeah, so there was about 6 years I was asleep within the company, and then the last 2 years it was fully awake, and that process started. And once it started, you know, I remember the last thing thinking to myself, what else are they lying about? And that was it. Wow, you know, bam, like it just came. And for 2 years, I was really, really, really suffering being inside of YouTube and Google, because Google owns YouTube, and seeing the company transform like this. There's actually a mass shooting at YouTube, and my coworker had to like dodge out of the way to miss the bullets. And I came down and saw that the shotter had shot themselves. And when everything happened, the reason that came out that this person had, you know, done this mass shooting is that they were demonetized.
I remember that, and we're not saying that was good what they did, but it was the dehumanization created the desperation. These are people caught up in a digital gulag, is what you're saying. So what have you felt like you said, a weight was lifted off your soul? What is the feeling like now?
You know, I felt really guilty about drawing a salary, and I tried to let people know that this was coming. And now that I've released all of the information, I realize I'm not part of that evil system anymore. And it's very uplifting. And I feel that I can, you know, meet my maker at the very end. And when he says, you came across evil, what did you do? And I'll be able to like look him right in the eye and said, I sacrificed everything to let the American people know that the AI weapons were pointed directly at their mind.
Wow. Zach Voorhees, the super charismatic, smart Edward Snowden of Google, thank you so much, sir. We salute you. Please come back anytime. Please come to town, both of you guys. Thank you. We salute you. Greg Coppola, who helped start this chain reaction, your comment on your journey, and you know, you're suspended. They're coming after you, but you seem uplifted. What is the process? I saw you nodding when he was talking about feeling empowered. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, first of all, I'm not sure if I'm actually more a senior than Zach, but
let's just describe you as a senior long-term engineer on major algorithms.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We could argue about who's more senior all day, but I would say that, I definitely believe in energy, karma, reincarnation, that kind of stuff. So there is kind of like a karmic duty to, you know, I think when I was comfortably drawing my paycheck, I felt, you know, more comfortable, more certain. Now I feel, you know, there's definitely a lot of uncertainty, but I feel more alert. And obviously, yeah, I mean, just, you know, just the fact that I'm not anonymous kind of makes life a little more dangerous. So it's just kind of actually making me a little bit more awake.
Awake means alive?
Oh, yeah, more alive, yeah.
Come down the path further, my friend. It only gets better. And the discernment that opens up, you talk about AI, God's AI. I'm not going to get into it on air, but it's getting really scary, actually. I mean, I'm not going to talk about it on air, but people have to experience it for themselves, and it's amazing, it's incredible, and it's scary. But the truth is scary, and the system knows this. They're trying to create a system to shutter humanity so we don't realize our full potential. But I think both of you are really smart men, and you're leaders, and you're heroes. And so I want to salute you both. Thanks for spending so much time with us today.
Thank you for everything you do, Alex.
Thank you.